AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is sponsored by Full Scale from Helena. Help soybeans reach their full yield potential with an efficient foliar blend of plant extracts and micronutrients from Full Scale. City council, school board, some state governments, they are all depending on you to fulfill your responsibilities as a citizen of this great country. It is Election Day 2021 and time to head to the polls. And it's time to get an update on the snarled up supply chain in this country and to preview what could be a red hot year-ending land market.
Live from Yesvember Tuesday via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a chat with Ken Erickson from IHS Market. Then we're talking land with Doug Hensley, president of Hertz Ag Real Estate. And right after the news, Karen Bonert from Farm Journal's Milk. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lowry.
Okay, we're past the first day of Yesvember. And you're committed. It feels like you are committed to this.
Yes, November 2 falls on a Tuesday, and that feels very significant.
It does?
Yes, so we're going to continue the Yesvember spirit, at least through today.
All right. Love it. How you doing, Davis? Everything good?
Super great, brother. How about you?
Doing real fine, and I hope everything is going well for all of you. And welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Hello.
It is time to get out and vote. Now, some of you may be looking at the elections in your community and saying, it's not really all that important.
Get out
I'm
there.
Rural.
No. No.
It's get out and vote.
We're saying yes to voting. Yes, November voting day is here.
That's
do
right.
Do it.
That's right. So get out and get it done.
You know, and just because we're calling it Yesvember doesn't mean that on some items on the bill you might need to vote no. And I'm calling just a temporary pause in those specific instances. Vote your conscience. Vote what's best for your local community. Don't be afraid to vote no, but I'm still calling it Yesvember.
I got you.
Got me?
I got you.
Yeah.
You bet. All right. Great conversations coming up. We're going to get an update on the supply chain situation and what's going on there. And then the land market. It's been a while since we've had a conversation with Doug, or at least since I've had a conversation with Doug on AgriTalk. We've got Doug Hensley from Hertz Farm Management coming on later. Should be really good. All right, man, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, Senator Joe Manchin blasted House designs on lumping the physical and social infrastructure bills under one vote, saying, quote, the political games have to stop. It's time to vote on the BIF, that's the physical infrastructure bill, up or down, and then go home and explain to your constituents the decision you made. He said he will not vote for a reconciliation bill until there's a vote on infrastructure. Manchin continued, saying, quote, as more of the real details outlined in the basic framework are released, what I see are shell games, budget gimmicks that makes the real cost of the so-called $1.75 trillion bill estimated to be almost twice that amount. Meanwhile, Speaker Nancy Pelosi is scheduled to go to Glasgow next week for a global climate change conference and wants this all wrapped up beforehand. Chip.
Well, Joe,
there's a lot
the
in there.
Yeah, here's the problem, Senator Manchin. You don't trust that the shell game has been settled and that you know where the prize is. And on the other side, the progressives, the far left of your party, they are looking at you and saying, you know what? We don't trust you. Therefore, we're not going to vote on the BIF until we get the triple B passed. I have no idea how this is going to end up, Davis. No idea.
He called it a shell show. I can think of some other sort of show it's starting to appear to
dumpster
resemble.
Fire or something. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly it. Eligible producers will receive a total of $1.8 billion in payments for 2020 crops under the Ag Risk Coverage and Price Loss Coverage programs this month. No PLC payments were triggered for corn, sorghum, or soybeans, but were triggered for several other crops, including wheat, seed cotton, and peanuts, for a total of $1.73 billion. Under the ARC County option, payments were triggered for all covered commodities, with the largest totals for corn and wheat. Payments for certain coverage levels under the dairy margin coverage program have been triggered by the national average margin for September of this year.
Yeah, we'll get to some of those details later this week when we get Wiesmeyer back on here.
Well, Europe faces a further squeeze on natural gas supplies after Russian flows through transit routes fell, and Algeria stopped some shipments to Spain. Benchmark gas futures on Monday surged up to 15% before falling back again as Russian gas started flowing eastward from Germany to Poland, while pipeline damage in Bulgaria also impacted shipments from Gazprom, that's Russia's gas giant, to some parts of Europe. Spain's deal to ship Algerian volumes via Morocco also expired. China is buying more liquefied natural gas from the U.S. than ever. The activity has helped send prices soaring. It is a result of China's effort to cut carbon emissions by reducing how much coal it burns. LNG prices have surged in response. Have we lost Chip?
No, I'm here.
Are we there? Okay. Oh, you just got really quiet. I thought, oh no, what happened here? Sorry, you got too quiet. Give me a little once in a while. I even hear crickets here.
Sorry.
LNG prices have surged in response. I was going to push the reset button. Benchmark rates for spot deliveries into Asia hit $56 per metric million British thermal units early in October. That's more than 10 times the prices they were at the same point a year earlier. Prices have since fallen, but there is a forecast cold winter ahead. Chip?
Sure. You bet. All right. Thank you, Davis. Hey, let's bring in Karen Bonert. She is the editor there at Farm Journal's Milk. Good morning, Karen. How are you?
Hey, Chip. I'm good. Well, hey, don't we all wish we could hit that reset button?
Yeah. Every now and then. That's exactly right. I was just going to say, it's not easy to attract workers these days, and it might be even harder to hold on to them once you've got them on payroll, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I was able to connect with Jorge Delgado with Alltech, who kind of shed some light on this. And he really just said that producers need to change their mindset about HR and dedicate time and energy to this. Where do you start? Update your employee handbook. I know, just tell them the history of your farm and don't think of it as another piece of paper employees have to read and sign, because it can show that there's a common bond, the desire to work and support family. Education, Chip, you know, employees crave it. Explain the whys and hows behind the procedure. Don't just talk to them, interact with them. Hands-on demonstration, educational videos, it really resonates. And of course, establish a level of respect, open communication, get to know them. That always makes a difference. But I know the million-dollar question is money. What's it going to take? Really, what Jorge says is the big thing is communicating the whys when giving raises and bonuses. Incentives should be, of course, tailored around clear goals and the reality of the dairy economy. And set up, employees want to be set up for success. For example, a milking unit not working properly or lack of bedding to bed stalls with, they feel like they're being set up for failure. Fix that unit. Have enough bedding material in hand. Little things, Chip, really can make a big difference. And real quick, we had a farm that raises 15,000 calves, 35 full-time employees. Jorge held a two-day off-site meeting with them, of course, mostly in Spanish, for their managers to build leadership skills. The employees loved it. They really liked knowledge and feeling like they could be a team. And because of that, the farm virtually has had no turnover in those leadership positions. And they really credit it to hitting that reset button and going over the tips that Jorge outlined.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so important. It's so much about building that team attitude. You're individuals with individual responsibilities, but it's part of that bigger teamwork and effort that makes the farm run. So really cool stuff, Karen. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Karen Bonert, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We're going to update the supply chain disruptions with Ken Erickson next.
For a farmer, every day is different, and every season tells its own story. Make this the year you do it your way. Coron Metra is a foliar fertilizer that lets you decide when the time is right for nutrition. Metra gives you flexibility, it gives your tank efficiency, and Metra gives your crop more than just nitrogen. Coron Metra, the next evolution in crop nutrition. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration before use.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us this morning. Davis Michelson is here as well. And
hello.
Hello, Davis. It's
just
great
hello.
To talk
yeah,
with
go
you.
On.
Okay.
You're doing great.
Oh, thank you.
Proud of you. I'm proud of you.
Proud of you, too, David.
Oh, shucks.
Okay. Let's get on to the conversation with Ken Erickson. Ken is the Senior VP of Client Advisory and Development for Energy and Transportation and Policy at IHS Market. Joins us right now. Ken, how's the view this morning? You seeing anything interesting?
I've seen a lot of cotton bales. I've seen some corn still standing off of 55, and I just got done enjoying a breakfast pizza slice at Casey's. Life is good.
Yeah, baby. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, man. You know, you got to make sure that if you're talking about that, you've got to be able to describe it. Otherwise, you know, like Beto O'Rourke, that can knock you out of a presidential race if you get that wrong.
Well, and I tell you, it's good. It's bacon, it's eggs, it's cheese, and pizza dough. What
there
you
we
know,
go.
That combination brings it all together just nicely.
Amen. Amen, brother. Welcome to Casey's Breakfast Pizza. Love it. How are you? Everything okay?
Hey, it's doing well, blue skies, but I wish we could say that for everything else going on with trying to get stuff to the consumer and for people to buy stuff around the world. We still have some clouds out there, and it's pretty tough what we see on the horizon here.
Okay, let's talk specifically about the choke points out there on the West Coast. Ken, are things loosening up? Is product flowing any better?
Yeah, I think they're getting some progress, and with the ports authorities in L.A. Long Beach instituting a very rigid a daily container fee, saying if you go over a certain number of days, you know, free days, we're going to charge you $100 per container per day. And right now, those dwell times are more than doubled from average. And so you're starting to get 5 to 9 to 18 days. That gets to be pretty expensive. You know, it's a cumulative total, too. So that is going to incentivize movement because if you can't move, if you can't bring a container off a ship because there's no place in the yard to put the container, you can't do anything with the ship. And likewise, to try to get stuff off the dock, and they got to find ways to loosen it up. But the challenge is, and they're also trying to get more offsite locations, and they're putting together some programs to support that. But it's not moving fast enough to make that happen. But they're trying to make something take place. And look, it's kind of gone across the rest of the United States. And Norfolk Southern Railroad, for example, is doing something similar, cutting how many days containers can stay on their properties, and they're charging some fees. They'll start charging higher fees. Says, get them out of here, guys. Find a way. We got to get this system moving because we're just all choked up otherwise waiting for a spot to open up.
Okay, Ken, there's been suggestions by DeSantis down in Florida, let's move some of those ships away from the West Coast, move them through the Panama Canal, get them into the Gulf of Mexico, get them to the Florida ports, get them to East Coast ports. Is that a workable, viable plan?
There is a viability to it in the sense that they've all have terminals, they have cranes, they have capabilities. Where it starts to fall apart is having enough container chassis to put those containers onto a chassis that would then be moved onto the, you know, the roads and highway system to get to the next position, whether it's a distribution facility. Charleston, I think it was, or Savannah was going to have a new chassis pool program put in place, but they had to delay it because they don't have the chassis because of some regulations around importing some of those. And hopefully they can start to see some loosening up of that, but you just don't have the chassis, and it's ideal, but it's not, you just don't have the equipment to make that happen straight away. You just move that problem someplace else.
Well, talking about moving the problem, I mean, there's activity at these ports already, I would assume. Wouldn't this just add to the disruption around the country?
It does to a certain degree, although it starts to spread it out a little bit, and hopefully you can get some support with the Eastern Railroads and some of those large market spaces. And the other side of it is there enough? I mean, think about this. For 15 consecutive months, we've had more than 2 million loaded containers coming off ships into the United States. And if you go back the previous 5 years before COVID, 2015 to 2019, only six times did we exceed 2 million loaded containers. Oh, and that's over 5 years. We've been doing that now steady for 15 months. That's a lot of volume that it's a tidal wave that just keeps coming, and there's not a respite in the system to try to recharge itself. And that's kind of where we are, is how do we get this respite? And I don't know if it's coming after the first of the year, if we actually go back to a seasonal pattern where we get beyond the peak season with the Christmas, Thanksgiving holidays, New Year's holidays, and then we take a little pause before it recharges. But everything's indicating, no, we still have to buy so much different goods and products. For I was with my surgeon yesterday. He says he can't get hats and other things because they're made in China or elsewhere, and they're stuck on ships. And those things that they take for granted that we need in more mass numbers, they've just escalated how much volume we need in that regard.
My gosh. Okay. So the trucks are one of the primary choke points on all of this. I mean, are we still looking at restrictive regulations in California, or are they starting to relax those regulations?
They're starting to relax them. Governor Newsom is asking that the state of California, Department of Transportation, planners find ways to expedite opening up container depots, landing areas, so they can get the economy moving, just get those off the ports so they can get throughput. You know, most of the cargo in California, a lot of the cargo will stay in the California area, but there's a great volume that goes into, you know, the heartland of the country. And he's recognizing if we can't move anything through, we're all in trouble. So he's hearing about it from his constituents that Christmas could be on his back if he doesn't do something about this. And I think they're feeling the pressure.
Okay, timeline on the way things are right now. Can it feels like this is an issue that we're going to be talking about in 3 months, probably 6 months?
I think 3 months for sure. And I'll tell you this, here at IHS Market in our Purchasing Managers Index, we collect a series around delivery times. There's a delivery time index. And it looks like it may be peaking in the most recent count. And that says a lot about product prices, consumer prices and such. And it looks like it may have peaked, and maybe we might see some things loosening up. But I'll tell you, anything can change, because the way China is with COVID, they shut things down. I was just reading today, if you want to go to that country in Beijing, 3 weeks, you got to wait in quarantine. You can't afford that in this economy. And if they start shutting things down like that, we're in trouble. It just proliferates this problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I want to switch gears a little bit, because I know that you focus on energy issues as well. And we had a conversation, Jim Wiesmeyer and I had a conversation with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack last week, and he talked about sustainable aviation fuel again. And he sees so much potential in it. He talks about it being a potential 35 billion gallon market. Ken, is that right?
That is a number that's being put out there, and that's way into the future. But even still, to start thinking about that, let's think about what the aviation industry is trying to do. You've got this little fly-by-night company in Memphis named FedEx, flies all over the world, and their customers are saying, we are looking at every part of the supply chain to lower emissions and be more sustainable. How are you going to help us? And they're looking at all options, and let's face it, you can't put enough batteries on an airplane to make it fly. So they got to find an alternative. And that's where these big carriers, especially EU, is really pushing this. And we got to watch the EU, but also the United States. And there's, you know, the timeline is way out there. It's hard to pinpoint it because it's a big moving target. There's more questions than answers, especially when it comes to the infrastructure to support this. And then the feedstock. The feedstock, of course, is going to be the big one in all this, besides the renewable diesel. The sustainable aviation fuel is a big, important component because that's probably the only one in the transportation mix that you really can't do much more other than keep traditional fuel. Then how do you change the traditional fuel to be more sustainable? And that's where this gets to be very important.
Boy, very important is an understatement, because if we're going to keep commerce moving around the world, we're going to have to find new ways to make these the carbon-friendly fuels. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
It is, and everyone is breaking apart their supply chains and saying, where do we eke out some more sustainability? And that's going to be every mode of transportation, every operation you have, what's the emissions, where's the source of that energy that you've got, and what do we do to try to make it better, cleaner, and more accommodating for our consumers, or you know, the big box companies. They're putting it on. The consumer may or may not know any different, but that's part of the process we're in here, because there are these mandates that we're seeing. And this week, of course, and what we heard yesterday with India by 2070, God, that's amazing to think some of those countries. That 2070 is a long ways off, but it's really not.
That's exactly right. Ken, great conversation, buddy. Always worth the time to have you on AgriTalk. Thank you so much.
I'll have another slice of pizza for y'all. How's that?
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beach, a little bit of a turnaround Tuesday going on here today.
Yeah, we had new highs in the wheat markets overnight. So SRW, HRW, and spring wheat futures pushed out to new highs and carried that forward to early and daytime trade. But now we've run into some profit taking. Probably not too surprising. We've been up multiple days in a row here, and new contract highs multiple days. And it's overbought, and all the indicators are that, the market just needs to at least pause and maybe pull back some here. So, like I said, not surprising to see the profit taking and the corrective selling, but that has influenced the corn market, and corn's trading lower as well. Now, December futures, they rallied all the way up to the trend line drawn off the May and June highs and were turned back at that trend line. So that's a critical technical level to watch moving forward.
Absolutely it is, but we've still got that DEES 21 contract above 575, so that market is holding in there really nicely. Bean market, a little bit of strength in soybeans and soybean meal, some pressure on soybean oil. Take us over to the livestock trade. We've got some strength in the cattle complex.
Yeah, so both live cattle and feeder cattle are trading to the upside. Probably not a surprise there on feeder cattle, given the response yesterday to the corn market and with corn trading lower this morning, sea feeders up in a corrective trade. That isn't surprising. And then live cattle, I think that with the strength that we've seen in the box beef market and the cash cattle market here recently, firmer tone probably isn't too much of a surprise either. On the hog side of things, we're pulling back. So late last week, we ran up Thursday and Friday and now pulling back from those levels.
We've got Brian this afternoon on AgriTalk. Thanks, Beach.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Your next piece of equipment is on MachineryPete.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on MachineryPete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I am Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with us. Man, it's always a fun conversation and an enlightening conversation with Ken Erickson from IHS Market.
He mentioned India's climate plan just right toward the end there. If we have time in the fourth, I might get to some more details on that. It's interesting.
Okay. Really? Do you have it in front of you right at this moment to just give us kind of a little hint?
Well, as a matter of fact, I do. Basically, it was kind of holding out a little bit on climate pledges, and then the prime minister shows up, made a commitment to achieve net zero carbon emissions by 2070, puts it 10 years behind China and Saudi Arabia and 2 decades behind the U.S. and European Union. A lot of people live over there in India, a lot of emissions. And so 2070, man, that's a ways out.
It's out there. It feels a long ways away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Let's bring in Doug Hensley. Doug is the president of real estate at Hertz Farm Management, and he joins us right now. Doug, welcome back, man. It's good to talk with you again.
Thanks, fellas. 2070, is that what you said?
Yeah.
That's a long ways
2070,
away.
2070,
baby.
That's
gonna
way
be carbon
beyond
neutral
our next 30
by
years.
Then.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be selling farms at that point. I don't know what I'll be selling. So. Good to be with you guys again today.
You bet.
Big Apple just chimed in here. He says in 27 that he's going to be 101. That's possible.
I'll be 99.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm going to be like
it's within.
I'm going to be like 106. I can do this.
You're fine. You're fine.
I'm feeling good about it. I'm feeling good.
Let's all meet then, shall we? Shall we all meet meet up then, the three of us?
Well, we'll probably still be on the air, so
hopefully, with any luck at all.
Trying to pay off our taxes. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have gone there. Doug, it's good to have you back. Let's get to this. And you know what? I'm just going to go straight to it. You guys handled the sale recently down in Johnson County, Iowa, that set a new record, $26,000 an acre. What happened?
Yeah, wasn't that something? Back here a couple of weeks ago, right on the Lynn-Johnson County line between Cedar Rapids and in Iowa City, west of 380, and not a super build-up area, fairly rural part of Johnson County, getting, you know, kind of transitioning into that industrial area south of the Cedar Rapids Airport there. But it was 151 acres. It was a mile long through piece, quarter mile wide, had a building site cut out of it on each end. The south parcel actually bordered a little town called Swisher, which is not a huge community, but the south end of that particular, that particular parcel was zoned, the south part of it, the South 40 was zoned for, you know, 10 years from now, it may have some houses on it. We'll see.
Right.
But that farm zoomed to $26,000 an acre. A local developer ended up buying it. It was a bidder's choice sale, only took that particular parcel on the south end. Then we came back for a second round of bidding on the remaining parcel. And it was a half a mile north, only bordered by farms. Really, I don't see that it's ever going to be, at least in the foreseeable future, anything but a farm. Ended up bringing only $21,000 on that particular parcel. So a farmer bought it, and what an incredible sale. But it's a little bit, it speaks to the strength of the market, frankly, that we've been seeing everywhere. And this started last fall with the rise in grain prices, but that's kind of accelerated, it seems like, and multiplied through much of this growing season and into, you know, later 21 here where we're at today. So, an amazing sale, huge crowd, lots of interest.
Yep. Doug, I noticed something interesting there. So you sold two tracks, one for $26K, one for $21K. They're neighboring tracks, as I recall.
Right.
The lesser value bought by a farmer, the greater value bought by a developer. That feels significant to me.
Well, I mean, anytime you're in an area, and like I said, that don't think of that farm as you know, Ankeny, Iowa, or Iowa City, where it's right on top of development, because that's not what it is. But you are in between two highly populated areas with Cedar Rapids and Iowa City, and there's just lots of people that may have sold some property and are looking to reinvest funds, and they want to do it close by and maybe have some potential other than just pure ag land values. And that's essentially what came into play here, especially on that south piece, because zoning makes a difference with what can be done with properties in some of these areas where zoning controls are a little tighter.
You look at that growth on that 380 corridor down there, New Liberty. Mm-hmm. The growth is pretty mind blowing what's taking place. So, and there's lots of expectations that, the growth that Tiffin has seen just down the road from Swisher is going to happen in Swisher here over the next 10 years. So it could end up being a very, very savvy move for that guy.
Agreed. I had kind of thought in advance that we might touch 20. I was kind of hoping that. But for both parcels to bring what they did, it was a head turner for sure.
Yeah.
You bet it was. So take us around the rest of the country. It feels like it's been a hot market this fall and it's been a market that's been tested, because it feels like there's a fair amount of offerings out there, Doug.
Yeah. That's one of the big differences right now compared to where we were a year ago in this market.
Yeah.
A year ago, everybody was kind of scratching their head after derecho, and grain prices had started to respond, but there wasn't a lot of farms available. And that was one of the things that was actually supporting our farmland market for the longest time, really for several years, from say 2015 through 2020, the lack of sales. Every neighborhood you went to, there wasn't an abundance of sales, but there was a half a dozen farm families and a couple investors at every sale that would push things, because there was a lot of dry powder, even in a tighter margin environment. And here for the past 9 to 12 months, that has really changed, especially as we got into 2020. The results of the election obviously changed people's thinking a little bit because of the tax situation. And I'm not arguing whether that's good or bad, but the reality of the desire and push of the administration to adjust some tax policy has encouraged, I think, some people who were sitting on the fence and thinking about selling. They've said, hey, maybe if capital gains are going to change, and maybe I should try to get ahead of that. And so we've had the normal estate settlements, and we've had people that were kind of fence sitters, so to speak, for the past handful of years that have said, hey, this market looks pretty good. Strong grain prices, low interest rates, all that lines up towards, being a good time to sell something, because there's a lot of people interested. And that's exactly what's happened. We have seen a tremendous volume of sales across the market, and they've all been, by and large, all been strong.
So, Doug, have all the fence sitters been knocked off the fence then, or are there still some who might look at this $26,000 sale or other sales in their area, because it's not just, that area, who might say, doggone it, I'm gonna put this land up for market. Is there anybody left? Have we flushed them out?
Yeah, there are. There's still a lot of land coming to the market here in the month of November. I think we'll probably see a record volume for the year. Is going to happen here in the month of November, and December is going to be busy too. It'll be interesting to see what the volume change will be after the first of the year, and to kind of really get a sense of how many of those people were trying to get a sale into the 2021 calendar year for tax purposes. I think that will be interesting to watch. But yeah, Davis, it's a situation where as people out in, that may not live in Iowa or Illinois or where you're hearing AgriTalk regularly, as they have learned wow, this farmland market is strong, much stronger than what I expected. So some of those people are starting to pay attention and wake up to the reality of the market and are pushing into the market. So there's some opportunists that are looking at it. But it takes time for all that information to get to the coast and where everybody owns farms. So, yeah, there's going to be some more sales coming.
Okay. All right. Are more of them going to be sealed bid auctions, Doug? It seems like I've seen a trend towards more sealed bid auctions.
Yeah, I think maybe Chip, that has something to do with just the overall volume of sales has been higher. I think the vast majority of farms that are being taken to sale this fall are being done so in a competitive fashion. I still think public auction here in the last half of 2021 is really the preferred method. There are some reasons why you would want to maybe do things in a sealed bid fashion where it's a little more of a private process. But I, by and large, I think the larger majority of farms that are being offered to the market right now are still being offered at public auction where, you know, it's that open competitive environment. The other thing that has, you know, been added to this current farmland market that we didn't have 2 years ago is just all the online offerings that creates even a little more of a hybrid between a public auction where you're staring at your neighbor across the community center or VFW or wherever a farmland auction is typically held. And, you know, it's an open competitive environment online, but you can't see necessarily all the people that are interested in that farm. So that has added a really interesting dynamic to our farmland market. And it's another option for people that we're seeing a lot of.
Doug, thank you so much. We're out of time. We'll talk with you again soon, man. It's always fun.
Always fun. Thanks, fellas.
Thanks, Doug. That's Doug Hensley, president of real estate at Hertz Farm Management. Davis and I will be right back.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture, and is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to AgriTalk. Davis Michelson here with your beloved host, Chip Flory.
Yes.
Glad to have you all along. A couple of pretty stout conversations. Ken Erickson, IHS Market, then Doug Hensley from Hertz. But I want to go back to this number 2070, Chip, real quick.
Yeah.
Because by my math, that still falls within my next 50 years. I'm going to, in my next 50 years, I'm going to settle all the scores. Cry a little less. I'm going to laugh a little more. Drink a little lemonade and not so many beers.
It's almost like I know what you're going to say next.
Uh-huh. 2070 is right around the corner.
Right around there.
In my window. India made its commitment to net zero carbon emissions by 2070. Puts it, let's just call it what it is, decades behind the U.S. and European Union, 10 years behind even China.
Yeah.
But we got a query from a beloved listener regarding the year 2070.
Here,
would you care to handle that?
An email came in from Kent. He wants to know what December 2070 corn futures look like.
That's a good question.
That's a great question, Kent. It'll fit that long-term planning, man. That's what I like to hear about. I want to hear about the goals that are going to get you to that 2070 corn marketing plan and take you away from there. That's so awesome. Great question.
There's been a lot of talk about the climate conference. I don't know if you want to get into this or not.
Yes,
Biden to announce tougher regulations on methane emissions from oil and gas production on Monday, calling for methane cuts, quote, calling them the most effective strategy we have to slow global warming in the near term. EPA will propose new rules to plug methane gas leaks at hundreds of thousands of oil and gas wells in the U.S. A review of the plan just completed by OMB on Monday to strengthen current regulations on new oil and gas wells. Chip?
Right. See, there is a I hope people understand by now that there is a difference between methane gas that is emitted from the drilling process, okay, and the oil and gas extraction process, and the methane that is emitted from ruminants. We've had Dr. Frank Mittlerner from UC Davis on the show a few times to talk about those differences and how methane gas in a ruminant situation, an agricultural situation, has a cycle. And mm-hmm. it is already effectively net zero based on the timeline. In other words, methane from agriculture is transient. It's got about a 12-year cycle on it. This is different. And so when you search that framework, the Build Back Better Plan framework, when you search it for the word methane, it shows up 22 times. I think two of those times it is referenced along with agriculture, but the other 20 times it's focused on fossil fuel extraction.
Well, and I got to ask, I mean, why has no one asked this before? If Tina Turner can figure out how to power Bartertown, Bartertown, with methane, why can't we? Why can't we?
Know.
Let's put it to work. Let's put it to work.
Yeah.
For crying out loud.
Well, and there are so many systems set up at livestock and dairy production facilities mm-hmm. around the country that are pulling that methane gas and are running their operations on that methane gas.
Right.
Agriculture is doing its part.
You know, imagine, I can see a world where electric vehicles.
Can it do more? Yes. But agriculture is doing its part.
Wouldn't be coal powered electricity. You would fuel them. You'd have like, okay, the charging stations would be hooked up to this little shed with like maybe a couple of hogs in there, a couple of cows maybe. And the methane would provide the electricity. Oh, boy, we've really got something here. Joe, are you writing this down? Are we getting any of this? EPA analyzed the proposed rules' impact on natural gas and oil prices from 2023 to 2035 and estimates that changes would be small. What EPA said would amount to, quote, pennies per barrel of oil or 1,000 cubic feet of gas.
Wow.
Just pennies per barrel. How can we not?
Okay, now is it pennies per barrel from 85 or from 46 or from 150?
Good question.
You know, what's the baseline?
Let's see
what's
the percentage.
The baseline? Is it $5 natural gas or is it $2? I don't know the answers to that.
I don't either.
And I don't know if they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, and speaking, just one more news item here quickly. Speaking of the EVs, electric vehicles. Provisions in the social infrastructure, that's your Build Back Better package, would provide $4,500 credits for electric vehicles that are made by union workers. Hmm. It's drawn the ire of ambassadors from several U.S. trading partners, saying it's unfair according to fair trade policies.
Yeah. If you're gonna play in the global community, you got to play by global community rules, and unions. And may fall outside of some of those global community trade rules. And so it's something that the U.S. is just going to have to identify the potential issues and deal with them as they come up with some side agreements. These trade agreements are full of side agreements that cover issues like this, and I would assume that that's how it's going to be handled. I'm a little surprised that you called it the EVs, electric vehicles. I thought for sure you would have called them cold powered cars.
Well,
you heard that the other day and
yes.
It stuck.
Oh, it stuck, baby. Well, if President Biden wanted to go to the climate summit with this infrastructure package in his back pocket, now Ms. Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker, wants to go to her own climate summit in Glasgow. Yeah. If the president couldn't get it done before his trip, if the House Speaker can get it done before her trip, well,
we'll see.
Then let's hold on to your hats.
It sounds like Secretary Vilsack is also going to be making the trip to Brussels and to Glasgow and try to be a part of it as well. There are so many comments that could be made about what has happened over there so far.
Yeah.
we probably had better just not make them. Thank you so much for listening this morning. Thanks to Doug. Thank you to Ken for being
excellent
part of it.
Sidestep.
Come back this afternoon. Brian Grady from Pro Farmer. Tomorrow morning, Michael Langemeyer with the Ag Economy Barometer.